Country Life on Midlands 103. Brought to you by W. Orshaw Burlington Business Park Tullamore, supplier of New Holland's tractors in the Midlands. WORshaw.ie.
Now, good evening and welcome to Country Life here on Midlands 103. It's MJ Cleary with you for the next hour, bringing you the latest from Midlands and further afield from the world of farming, food and agribusiness. Now, thank you all for joining me this evening and welcome to the programme as always. I know a lot of tired farmers out there now. We're talking on the 1st of March today, so thankfully, look, we're getting through the spring season, but long nights, hard work at the moment, and maybe two-thirds of the way through calving on a lot of dairy farms. So a lot of people now just feeling the pinch at the moment. So it is a tough time, but look, we're getting there and weather is on our side, thankfully. A lot of drying again over the course of the last week. Great week, cows out. Look, a little bit colder than we would like, especially today. You're just starting to feel that pinch of cold and we'd like it to just be a little bit milder. Maybe a little bit of rain would come and kind of break the weather, get it into a small bit milder territory. But look, it is what it is at the moment and we will definitively take it. No question about that. Now, breaking news to start the programme, and I have been speaking to you about acres for the last few weeks. We've been waiting and waiting and waiting for word, and just as of today, it has been revealed that all farmers, all 45,000-46,000 farmers are going to be accepted into the acres scheme. So if you have had an application made for you over the course of the last couple of months by your Ag Advisor, you will be getting a letter in the next week or so from the department saying you've made it in. And I have to say, fair play to the Minister for Agriculture on this, for getting all the farmers into it. It is a big one and funding has to be gotten from somewhere in relation to it. So fair play, credit where credit is due, and it will definitively add income to the coffers of farms this year. It's looking like average payments around 6,000 per year. Now, that's a lot of that is up Connacht Way, Galway, Mayo, Donegal, etc., where you have large tracts of lands and you can get into a lot more of the eco side of things. But in general, it is still beneficial. So that's the news this evening, and you will be getting word on that going forward. Now, also this evening, I'm going to be speaking to a very interesting man later on the programme. That's Aidan Connolly, and he's originally from Dublin. He's now based in North Carolina. He started his career with Altec, and he's now heavily involved in agriculture from all sides. He lectures, he writes, he's involved in startups, to name just a few of his areas. And this evening, he's going to be speaking about a new book he has launched called The Future of Agriculture. It speaks about how we may be farming in the future and what people will be eating, areas such as robots working the land, to protein coming from insects, a whole multitude of areas. So stay tuned to hear someone who really is on top of their game a little later in the programme. Very interesting piece of literature there. I'm just saying it's available for free, this book. I'll be giving you the link after a while. Now, tillage farmers are up in arms as they are being completely priced out of the land leasing market, according to IFA Grain Chairman and Leishman Kieran McAvoy. The new nitrate rules mean that dairy farmers need extra land to maintain numbers, and tillage farmers simply cannot compete. This, coupled with an increase in pesticides by about 40%, means a tough year ahead, and I'm going to speak to Kieran a little bit later in relation to all of that. Now, I regularly feature TB here on the programme, the bane of farmers' lives, as I say every time, myself included, no different to anybody else, and nobody likes the annual TB test. But there is a significant increase in compensation rates, and it might make things a little bit easier for you should your herd go down. Hugh Farrell from the ICSA, he's our resident TB expert here on the programme, joins me regularly, and he's going to give me a rundown on the figures a little bit later. There's also a bit more good news for pedigree breeders who were a little bit overseen, up to date, and they're going to be given a fairer amount going forward. Now, to start the programme this week, we're talking about calves, and we have Declan Maron from the Irish Farmers Journal on the line. Declan, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Good evening, MJ.
So, Declan, I had you on, I think it was about a month ago, and we were talking just on the cusp, really, of the calf-rearing season and, indeed, calves being born. But, look, we're 1st of March now. We're in the thick of it. A lot of calves, I'm guessing about 66%, maybe two-thirds of calves born on farms. That's just off the top of my head. I'm sure it's something in around there. And that means lots of calves in March. How is the trade, Declan, at the moment? What would be the overarching theme of it?
Yeah, I suppose we've seen exponential growth in calf numbers at sales over the past fortnight, MJ. You know, even this week we're up, I think, 170% on the previous week again. So still massive numbers jumping. Primarily that's made up of Frisian bulls, as you would expect. I suppose a trade for them. I suppose all calf trade is kind of, there's a fair divergence in it. I would call it under the 50 kilo calf and the above 50 kilo calf. That's there's a good firm trade for decent calves over 50 kilos, but speaking to numerous smart managers, they're just telling me that the number of buyers for that lighter calf under 50 kilos, you know, it's very difficult to find a home for that animal, and they're really urging dairy farmers to hold on. Okay, they've been to pick a calving now and the pressure on for housing, but, you know, if you can at all, to hold on to get those calves up to 48, 50 kilos, because that's really where exporters are kicking into the market there. They're operating 50 to 60 kilos on the main. They will drop to 48 kilos if for a batch of calves if they have to. But, you know, below that, very little customers for that calf. So real important message there on calf weight. I suppose we're seeing more marks weighing calves again this year, which is providing more information for buyers. So if you look then, I suppose exporter-type calves, we've had a really good start to the export season. You know, conditions have been absolutely perfect for salings. There's been no hold-up. The latest Board BF figures for the week up to the weekend in 18th of February show 13,164 calves were exported, which is an increase of over 7,000 on the same period in 2022. So a real boost for the start of the calf export season. So, you know, that's really helping things out. Shippers are able to keep their yards emptied out of calves, and they're obviously staying ringside to keep them coming into their yards. So, but they're kind of operating, between 50 and 60 kilos, and they're paying anywhere from €40 up to €90-95 for the typical export type calf. Then for Frisians, say your stronger type Frisian, older, 4 weeks, 5 weeks plus, farmer buyers are very keen for them. €100, €130 is picking up a lot of those. This week, maybe that early January-born calf, which farmers are so keen for, because, you know, that'll be a strong animal going to grass this year. We're seeing the last of them probably coming out now, and we've seen prices as high as €175 this week for month-old Frisian bulls that were 73 kilos. So decent prices there for good quality calves and with coming with a bit of weight. I suppose then on the beef side of the house there, and we are seeing more Angus and Hereford coming through slightly earlier in the season than in previous years, and I suppose that's coming down to the increased use of sexed semen on the dairy herds over last year, and beef straws being used on the dairy herd that bit earlier. So I suppose we're seeing a quicker decline maybe in price from those highs of early season. So again, early season prices are usually very high and the trade is hot and heavy. Once we see a big increase in numbers, you see that kind of prices every year falling back quite quickly. This year, this week, week-on-week prices for Aberdeen Angus heifers up to 3 weeks old, they're averaging €110 this week. That's back €30 ahead on the previous week, so it's a fair drop in 7 days. But we have seen a big rise in numbers too. So then on sale Hereford, the same age, we're talking €144 for heifers and €195 for bulls. So Hereford, they're pulling out ahead there of Angus's at the moment, but you might see that kind of correct itself again in the next few weeks. But that's kind of where we're at the moment, MJ, in terms of calf prices.
Yeah, very good, Declan. That is, I'm guessing, down a little bit on last year, if you're talking about 110 average for a poly heifer about 3 weeks old. Am I right in that?
Yeah, look, we're back 30, €35 ahead probably on the same time last year. I was just looking back on last year's prices, and you know, those kind of prices were being achieved maybe around the 20th of March last year. So you can just see maybe it's just, as I said, the shift of those numbers coming out that little bit earlier, and we're just seeing maybe the market settle that bit quicker than we have seen in previous years.
In general, those heifer calves, be they Angus or Hereford, Declan, in around that price, 110, 144, what sort of weights are we talking about there?
You're probably talking between 50 and 55 kilos, probably maximum, I would say, MJ. You know, so we're not getting full weight data through in the ICBF calf price report, but because not all marts are weighing them, but where we are getting weights recorded, we're getting that data in through too, so it is nice to follow it through, and we are seeing that, you know, once we go under the 50 kilos, you're seeing price tailed off fairly quickly. So yeah, up to 3 weeks, we're seeing up 50 to 55 kilos typically.
Yeah, and on average, is that what you're talking, like you're talking roughly 21, 22 days old are in around 50 kilos. Seems a good weight for a 3 week old calf.
Yeah, look, they've obviously been well done. You know, I'd say there'd be plenty of heifers maybe that wouldn't even be up to that weight too, but that's kind of what we're looking at on those ones. I'm sure there is, you know, ones dropping under that, so that's probably pulling down the overall average price maybe. You know, you're still a decent heifer, Angus heifer calf, it's probably still going to be making 140, 150 if the average is 110. So, you know, there is stuff pulling down the average as well.
Yes, absolutely. And where are we on Hereford bull calves in around 195? Where are we on Angus bull calves?
Angus bull calves up to 3 weeks, 150, and then say older 3 weeks to 6 weeks, 194. So again, yeah, you're 40 quid behind your Hereford price there probably, which is, you know, more than it would typically be. You'd usually see maybe 10, 15 euro in the favour of the Hereford calf at this time of the year, which, you know, given where the bonuses are, probably more in the favour of the Angus is.
I was going to say, Declan, it always surprises me that the Hereford garners an extra price at birth, because it never translates across to the, definitively not to the martering anyway. Anguses are always more sought after. When I say always, like more often than not.
Yeah, definitely. Look, that bonus can't be ignored as well, but I suppose maybe just the Hereford calves maybe looked at a little bit better than an Angus calf at this stage, you know, at 3 weeks old. They might look that little bit better, and maybe that's helping their price in the sales ring.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a word on the Thrive program, Declan, before I let you go. Have you started purchasing calves for the Farmers Journal program?
Yeah, so we're into the final year of Thrive in its current format. It's a 5-year program, so we're in the final year of it already. So we actually purchased calves in 2018 on John Halley's farm, on the demo farm, so that we would have yearlings going into year one. So when we're coming out of the program, we're actually not buying calves this year, because we didn't want to have yearlings that we wouldn't have through the system by the end. So John has just taken through the yearling cattle for us this year. We're probably going to put in maybe 35 or 40 yearlings just to make up the difference of the 150 cows that would normally be grazing alongside them. But on the other farms across the country, we will be buying probably in the next week or so. Our farms that we usually deal with, you know, there's numbers there ready to go. So I suppose we're just holding back a little bit to see what that price does in the next few days. But, you know, we're definitely in a price range now that we can see we can operate at, no problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Declan, we'll say many thanks for joining me. Great rundown there on the calf prices. I have to say, some great information, and we will chat to you again here on the programme. Declan Maron there from the Irish Farmers Journal. And interesting figures there, I have to say. Yeah, 110 on average there, you're talking Angus heifers, 144 on average for Hereford heifers, 150 on average for Angus bulls, and 195 average for Hereford bulls. Obviously there the average, a little bit more, a little bit less. It is a little bit back on where it was last year. It's probably not too far off around where it's going to stay, I'd say. Probably can't see Angus heifers going much less than that. Obviously, look, if they're 50 kilos, there's going to take a lot of work to get them up to that 90 or 100 as to where they need to go to get off milk. So it's a, you know, it's a long run across, but the market is kind of balancing itself out is what I'd say, and probably, as Declan said, not a million miles off where it's going to be. Big demand then for the Frisian calves, 4 or 5 week old calves, up 120, 130, 170 euro for 73 kilo calves. It's, look, it is a lot, but they're nearly reared, so I suppose there's two sides to it as well. It depends what you're after and what your system is, and that's where we're at on the calf side of things. Now, just before I go to the break, I have a little bit of news, a little bit of sad news from the farming community in the Midlands, and that is the death of Michael Fox, which has occurred as of yesterday evening. Now, a lot of you will be very familiar with Michael. He was involved in agriculture in a big way in the Midlands, especially in County Offaly, and he passed away yesterday evening. Now, I know Michael quite well. Michael's daughter, Mairead, is married to my brother, Colm. So we've known Michael over the years, and I'm going to give a little bit of a rundown of his career in agriculture. Obviously, he was farming extensively in Kilmurry, just outside Tullamore here in County Offaly, but he was involved in lots of different areas. So if we go all the way back, 1965, he was awarded the National Stock Judging Final. He won that in the RDS many, many, many moons ago. He went on to become the National Chairman of MOCRA back in the early 70s, 71 to 73. He was instrumental in bringing the Queen of the Land Festival to Tullamore, which we still have today, just on back in November. He was elected and worked as a county councillor for Offaly for many, many years, over 30 years, from the late 70s to the late noughties. And he was also the chairman of Offaly County Council from 94 to 95. Chairman of Mart here in Tullamore, the GVM Group, and very heavily involved in the founding of the world famous, I'm going to say, well, definitively Irish and UK famous Tullamore Show. Chairman of that, also chairman of Offaly Leader. And probably one of the things he was most well known for was his role as a judge of commercial and pedigree cattle nationwide. From Donegal down to Kerry, he would judge stock throughout the entire summer. And the last time he judged stock was in May 2022 in Kilkenny Mart. So just not too long ago at all. And an extensive career in agriculture, both farming and then both in all of those areas that he gave so much to. And he'll be fondly remembered by all of his family. We had some great times over the years, I have to say, with Michael. He was a great man, interested in GAA. And I've often sat with him on a Sunday and we'd watch a match. I remember off the top of my head, I was trying to think as I was driving down, we watched Galway and Kilkenny in the All-Ireland final a number of years back. And we had a ding-dong argument about, I think it was Joe Canning that day, he mightn't have been delivering. And he wasn't afraid to voice his opinions. Mairead, his daughter, sent me on the details here. But the one thing she left out was, of all the different things that Michael had on his list of attributes over the years, there's no mention of his ability to eat cake. He wasn't a drinker, but he was a great man to have a cup of tea and a slice of sweet cake. But the cake, the one caveat was, had to come from the Bridge House here in Tullamore. And he was a great judge of that, as much as stock. And I suppose a time like this is where you have to look at both sides of it. There's sadness when someone passes away, but also celebration of a very good life and an awful lot achieved. So I'm going to say our sympathies go to everybody in the family, and we're going to say to Michael, may he rest in peace. Now we're moving on to tillage, and I have leashman Kieran McAvoy on the line. Kieran, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
You're welcome, MJ. Good to be back on talking to you.
More than welcome, Kieran. It's been a while since you were on. As I was just saying to you during the break, nearly a year since I was speaking. It's amazing how quick time goes by. But we have you on this evening, and it's as a result of a little bit of disquiet that you feel in relation to the land letting market, I suppose. And look, it is one of those ones. The goalposts are after changing for dairy farmers, and it's after throwing the cat among the pigeons in relation to land letting. But you feel that dairy farmers are being hard done by, Kieran?
Well, look, first and foremost, I'm here to represent tillage farmers from the grain chairman point of view. But yeah, look, the goalpost change...
Yes, no, apologies, Kieran. Yeah, no, I meant to say tillage farmers there. I was actually looking at the word dairy. Yes, so yeah, absolutely, no, are representing grain farmers.
Yeah, so, no, look, MJ, I suppose we feel hard done by, but look, we're not here on to pick a fight with any other sector. I mean, markets have been good for dairy and other commodities and grain generally, but I mean, we're just out of the league. It's out of our league. Their land market is heated up. We think it's unfairly being pressure being put on farmers to rent land just for nitrate purposes. A lot of these people don't want to be in the land market at all. They're not going to shrink their businesses, and we're not expecting them to do that. And I think it's time that the minister woke up to that fact, and that we deal with the the nuisance are there. They're needed. And we think if there is something done with the minister, and that's why we've called on him to have a sit-down meeting with him on it, that we can move the nutrients properly from one sector to the other and, try and take the heat out of this. And look, I'm crazy here about it. There's a lot of farmers very worried about their business because of nitrates. Some farmers are getting land to alleviate that problem. Some farmers can't get that land. So what the consequences of it are that the land market has gone absolutely, in my opinion, because I take a lot of land, MJ, and so do most tillage farmers. And to be fair, there's probably nearly 40% of the grain in Ireland grown on rented lease land. And it's not, it won't be sustainable at high prices. So it's just not going to work. So that's why we're calling to try and come up with some plan to alleviate the situation. And the minister has talked a lot, and we've met him a number of times, and to be fair to him, he does seem to have an interest in expanding the tillage area in Ireland, and I think he's fairly genuine about it. But like this nitrates regulations that's coming in is having, it's just going to wipe out a lot of tillage land. People just, they're just getting wiped out of the land rental market. So one part of the department is saying one thing, and the other policy is doing untold damage. So, I mean...
And I suppose, Kieran, from a broad perspective, look, the market's the market, free market's free market, so, you know, price will be paid for ground, the market will kind of correct itself. Policy's been driven from Europe in relation to this, so the minister's hands are tied. I'm just being devil's advocate a little bit, Kieran. So I suppose, what is the middle ground? Like, what are you looking for? What do you think the solution could be?
I think, like, we always say that, you know, it's coming from Europe, and that the regulations are coming from Europe. But I think, you know, we try and formulate some policy that if the nutrients were to be going to, we'll say, it's a very different kind of a setup in Ireland, maybe, MJ, compared to a lot of Europe. Like, we've, you know, gone very specialised. People have gone into one sector, let it be dairy, beef, sheep or tillage. We don't have as much mixed farming as we used to have. So maybe, you know, we need a special policy for that to allow the nutrients come off these farms and into the tillage cereal areas. And, you know, it's a win for both sides. You know?
So I suppose you're looking, Kieran, really at exporting slurry from dairy farms to tillage farms, essentially, like, in you know, if that was to work, like.
Yeah, and it'll have to work, MJ, because it's not going to work any other way. Like, it'll have to be properly done and move from one farm to the other. And, you know, it'll probably have to be, we think there's room there for the minister to incentivise this. Look, it's early days. We just realised there's a major problem. We need to sit down with the minister and we need to work some solution here, because we can't see the tillage area shrinking in Ireland any further than it has. Like, just last year was the prime example with the unfortunate war in Ukraine. They'd actually took, even with markets being strong, it took an incentive to get people to go back to grow some corn. And, you know, it with the cap cuts that's coming in 2023, and look, MJ, I'm not a negative person. I'm a positive tillage farmer, and most of us are. But the reality is the tillage sector is under serious threat between that and, you know, your cap cuts and that. And now the land market has gone out of proportion. So, look, it could take a while for that land market to come back into, you know, a normal realm of things. And I know it's an open and free market and people can do, you know, their own business whatever way they want. But I do think there's a portion of farmers out there who are probably, you know, if they could find another solution, they probably don't want to be in the land rent market, MJ.
Yeah, absolutely, Kieran. I suppose it is a shame that the numbers changed on the slurry exports in spring of last year, that you essentially now have to export double what you had to this time last year. And it does make this more challenging. There's no question about it. So I suppose I do agree with you. You would need some sort of scheme, incentivized scheme, or some sort of a grant or something to come in to make it justifiable, because it would be prohibitively expensive for dairy farmers to export the type of slurry they need to export now to actually bring them under the bans.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, that's why we're calling on to have a meeting with the minister and to try and work out some, you know, start some bit of a plan here to get, to, you know, and as well within the department to rectify this situation, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, very good. I tell you, Kieran, we're just running out of time on it, so I'm going to say many thanks for joining me this evening. We will speak to you again on the programme, and I'll say many thanks for joining me.
Okay, thanks. Anytime, MJ. Thank you. Bye.
Kieran McAvoy there, Grain Chairman from the IFA from Emo in County Laois. And look, indeed, there's merit to what Kieran's saying, no question about it, if a synergy could occur. But as I said, the fact that those rules changed and that twice as much slurry needs to be exported now as did this time last year, or... yeah, I think it was yesterday, a year ago, it changed. It does mean that you would need some sort of government support. I just can't see the figure stacking up with the price of diesel and whatnot to move a slurry the way it's at. So look, that's one we will keep an eye on and see where it goes. Now we're moving on to the future of agriculture, and we have Aidan Connolly on the line. Aidan, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Yeah, thank you, MJ. This is a pleasure for me.
Very good, Aidan, and a pleasure for us as well here on Midlands 103. We're going to speak about your book in a moment, The Future of Agriculture. But first, a little bit of background on yourself, please, Aidan, where you started your career and where you are today.
Sure, yeah. Went to UCD, as many of us did. Did a BCom followed by a master's there. Then I emigrated to France, France for 2 years, Brazil for four, went to the US, then started traveling the world, went to over 100 countries, all while I worked for a company called Alltech. and about 4 years ago left that business to set up AgriTech Capital, which provides advisory, investment, and most recently publishing a new book called The Future of Agriculture.
Yeah, very good, Aidan. And the 100 countries and working for Altec for all those years is a very, very interesting career, no question about it. When you were on your travels, we'll speak about your book in a moment, The Future of Agriculture, but when you were on your travels and you were going all over the world and seeing different practices and different farming practices, look, it's a hard question, but was there anything you saw or a few things you saw over those years that you really set up and went, wow, this is mind-blowing?
All the time. I think that any country you go to, I've often said to people, if there's one thing you should do, it's get your passport and go travel, particularly if you're younger. I'm going to be speaking next week at a conference of the Nuffield Scholars. It's going to be in Vancouver in Canada. But they're people, there's about 100 of them. They're between 25 and 35 years of age and they travel the world looking. When it comes specifically to ag tech or new tech, Israel is immensely, it's a very impressive place to go. New Zealand is doing a tremendous job. I really like what they're doing in the Netherlands. Those are just three, aside from the US, of course. Those are three that I would particularly pick out as places to go to. But I don't think you'll ever lose anything by traveling or going to see farms, the UK, Northern Ireland, Germany, Eastern Europe. You know, wherever you want to go to, if you're there on holidays or otherwise, I think take the opportunity to learn, to go and visit some farms, because you'll always learn something new.
Yeah, absolutely. And your publication, The Future of Agriculture, look, you have a lot going on. You're a busy man, but you still had time to put this together. And it is a very comprehensive book, I have to say. I was flicking through it this morning and a lot of detail. What's the background to this, Aidan? What was the premise behind it, or why did you do it?
The last 5 years, so just briefly, Altec's obviously an Irish company out of America, immensely successful. While I was there, grew from about 25 million in sales to 2.5 billion. And I'd love to see more companies do that. So I started writing blogs on different areas, a blog on robotics, what's happening in the world of robotics, what's happening with sensors, what's happening with blockchain, another article on artificial intelligence. Started writing for Forbes, for the Technology Council, teaching at universities and MBA programs, and also writing my own stuff on LinkedIn, and eventually just got to the point of 5 years of that material and thinking, wouldn't it be great to put it all under one roof? Wouldn't it be great to have it all in one place? And the book came from that. The book, as you know, is distributed free of charge as an ebook. You can buy a physical copy of it. It's published by the Irish Farming Press Media Group. But the intent was just to have one place where you could go and get all of those ideas in the same, you know, under the same umbrella, as I'd like to call it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're talking now about the future of agriculture, future of farming. And I've picked a few little areas from the book when I've been looking at it, because we could spend all evening talking about it. It's such a comprehensive piece of work. But one area I was looking at and I said to myself, this is interesting. It's something we may be familiar with, but it hasn't kind of kicked on. And that's the whole area of 3D printing. So can you explain to us what it is and the role it may play in agriculture going forward?
Yeah, great question. So 3D printing, I think we're all familiar with to some degree. You've probably gone to a trade show and seen something being printed with or seen it in a shop, or seen it, you know, just even a YouTube video. Actually, when it comes to how it's being used today, it's being used to print pizzas. It's being used to print cakes. So you can see how layering on those different levels. But more interestingly, I think from an agricultural perspective, the ability to print parts for your tractor, for equipment on the farm, not to have to wait for it to be sent in from someplace else, particularly if it's coming from another country. I've even imagined where it could be used for printing bones or something to help animals, particularly high value genetic animals, where you don't have to cull them because they broke a leg or because they broke something that's critical, that you could just keep them moving. I could see where that could become really, really attractive. And I give some examples of the book of that being the case. But it particularly came home for me when I was in the middle of Africa. There's an Irish farmer in Zambia. And I was just thinking, he's got great equipment, things that he's purchased from Switzerland or US or South Africa. How does he get the parts for that? So that immediacy of being able to print your own part and be able to get going again is obviously the great advantage from an agricultural perspective.
And how close are we to that, Aidan, from a realistic perspective, a cost perspective for on-the-ground agriculture?
It exists today. Most of the equipment companies that you'll come across have it. It is not as universal as I'd like it to be, but it is there, and you do see it. If you certainly, I know there's a pig equipment company in the U.S. called Hogslat. They're doing it. I believe Big Dutchman is working on it for their parts. I haven't seen John Deere or any of the tractors yet, but it 3D printers aren't very quick, but you know they're quicker than waiting for something to come through the post. So from my perspective, I think that we see it already coming, and it's just going to happen faster and faster as we go along.
Another area which is of utmost importance on farms throughout the world, especially Ireland, is that of labour. Shortage of labour. We can't get help. We can't get good help. We can't get upskilled individuals. So the whole area of robotics and mechanising this, is this something we can see coming in the near future?
Yeah, that's happening as well. So even in the US, where labour is perceived as not being a problem, even in milking cows, which a lot of us, you know, look forward to milking cows and have enjoyed milking cows, getting people to milk cows three times a day, you know, get up for that 5 o'clock and be ready to clean. And it's clear where robots are coming in, and increasingly, of course, allows the cows to milk themselves. I would say that probably in Europe, maybe about 5% of the herd today are being milked robotically, probably 2-2.5% in the US. So that's happening. But it's even clearer when you think of meat processing plants. They're dirty. Hopefully not too dirty, but you know, they're tough environments. They've got a lot of blood and so on around. Most of the processing plants you see, Denmark, classic example, even in Brazil, certainly in the US, we're starting to see robots being used on the line to increasing degree. And I imagine that we'll see that in egg plants, milk plants, any sort of vegetables or flowers. Robotics are just a very, very big part of what's happening now.
We also talk about sustainability very regularly. Aidan mentioned it, I would say, on the programme every week. It's in all agri publications here in Ireland from morning till evening. But a lot of farmers, I suppose in reality, they don't really know what it is. Look, it's using less slurry spreading equipment, it's using protected urea and whatnot. But I saw a quote in your book and it says that sustainability, what is it really? In practice, it's working within the limits of a system. And I thought it was an excellent quote. And really, it nails it. And that is the message that needs to be put out there to people.
It is absolutely the message. And I think particularly in Ireland, we do a tremendous job from a sustainability perspective. But the eyes of the consumer and the eyes of the government and the eyes of different activist groups are obviously trained on agriculture. So we need to be cleaner than clean. We need to be holier than we have been before. And that's the task that we're facing. So from my perspective, sustainability is about the production system and leaving the land the way we found it. But increasingly, we do find even deeper questions about the use of water, the amount of what we release into the atmosphere, what leaches into the environment from our practices. So it's just so many, many different levels under which we're getting these questions. And I do think technology is a big part of how we answer as many of those.
10 years' time, Aidan, let's fast forward the clock to the 1st of March 2033. What are we going to see in the agricultural landscape? Are we going to have smaller herd sizes? Are we going to have completely different farming practices? Is it going to be much of the same with little tweaks? What would you think?
Consolidation and increasing size is inevitable. You know, you cannot compete in the world market with small farms unless you, as a farmer, unless you've got a second source of income and you're doing it as a hobby. There are different ways in which that'll be achieved. In the US, I've got a group of farmers coming to Ireland from the US in June. One of them, he has over 100,000 cows that they're milking on his farms. Now, that won't be in a single location, and particularly in Ireland, it won't be in a single location. So I'd imagine if you end up with 1,000 cows or 2,000 cows, in effect, you own 5 farms and you're consolidating them under one farm system. so that you can get those economies of scale, etc. And we see the same thing in the arable farming. We see the same thing in vegetables, mushrooms, etc., just larger and larger. And as you get larger, robotics are going to be a very, very large part of what we do. Sensors, so looking at the applications of, for example, water to plants, that will be measured in real time. You'll get the alerts in your telephone, etc. Everything to do with environmental management and stewardship on the land. I see record keeping increasingly being done, obviously, online, and again, being able to be delivered to your telephone. So those are the parts. The one I would say that most people don't think too much about, artificial intelligence, AI, it's very, very clearly the glue that sticks a lot of these technologies together, and it will replace certainly a lot of what humans do on the farm today. I don't think it replaces humans. I think we end up doing different jobs. It will make us better informed and hopefully reduce some of the mistakes we make when we get tired or we don't remember what it was that what we learned from our father or grandfather before.
And finally, Aidan, part of your business is advising agri-startups and agri-tech startups. For any young farmers who have, all farmers are entrepreneurs, but maybe who want to do something a little bit different, want to think outside the box, what would be your piece of advice for an entrepreneur listening this evening?
There is a huge world of opportunities there, and Ireland has proven very good about producing ideas, maybe could do a little bit better job of scaling those ideas. I think some of the ideas people come up with solve problems on their own farm, and they obviously see them in the farms around them. I think you do need to think about global problems, things that happen outside of pasture-only systems. You know, what are the more universal issues? In the case of cows, acidosis, lameness, fertility, those are universal problems. And if you can solve those, I think there's a huge market there for you. But aside from that, also think about the fact that Ireland is a country with tremendous technological companies here, the Googles, the Metas, the Twitters, and the Intels. If there's a way to either engage with those companies directly or more likely, maybe engage with some people that have worked for those companies, they bring the technological knowledge you need, you bring the farming knowledge, and you could produce a world-beating solution.
Finally, Aidan, I have to say many thanks for the chat. Hugely interesting. Where can people find a copy of your book? Where's the easiest way to access it?
It will be on Amazon in a few weeks for sale, but at the moment, the easiest place to find it is on my own website, agritechcapital.com, if you want to /books. But even if you go to the Agritech Capital website, you'll find it there. Download it on your phone, your Kindle, your ebook for free, or indeed you can just go through there and order the physical. If you really like reading it in paper, it's still there in that form as well. But I really would welcome any of your listeners to let me know what they think, give me some feedback. This is obviously an area I'm very passionate about, and I think it's going to be a big part of our future.
100%. Many thanks for joining me this evening, Aidan.
Thanks, MJ.
Aidan Connolly there, and his book, The Future of Agriculture, is available online on AgriTech Capital. And we're just going to run through some changes in TB compensation now for a minute with Hugh Farrell from the ICSA on the line. Hugh, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Thank you, MJ, for giving us the opportunity to speak here.
More than welcome, Hugh. Look, you're lobbying for TB for farmers up and down the country on a weekly basis. And we have to say, Hugh, I always say it to you, but many thanks on behalf of the farmers for it, because we need someone to fight our corner in TB. There's no question about that. Now, there is some good news for farmers as of the last couple of days who go down in their test. There's increases in compensation. Can you give us a kind of a broad overview of what we can expect, Hugh?
Well, there's an increase in the hardship grant there, like on the dairy cow, it's 21%, the suckler cow 18%, and the other cattle 17%. But the big benefit there is, before this, anyone with an off-farm income was discriminated. So whether you have an off-farm income or not, you're eligible for it. The income supplement has much the same increases as the hardship grant, and it's eligible to all farmers as well. So it is a benefit. It's maybe 18 or 20 euro for the raise on a cow, suckler cow. So over a period of 6 or 12 months, it's a good bit of money too. It's useful.
Yeah, absolutely, Hugh. And as you say, these figures, like, they're not shabby, 17, 18, 20%. Look, there's no figure is enough, but we're moving in the right direction. Are you reasonably happy with this?
Actually, we are. Like, we have to be, because, you see, it's all based on the levies and different issues, so we're not going to go into that this evening. We're short on time, so we are acceptable, happy enough, but the door's open for negotiations now. A lot of this is sort of new in 3 years, but I suppose there's other issues there ongoing has to be dealt with yet to get across the line. But another big increase there, like, another big issue is there for the farmer that's restricted, and before this they couldn't buy in, or maybe if they did buy in, they had to buy sign a waiver there that they couldn't get full compensation on an animal. That day will be gone, and you will be eligible for a full compensation, provided you have the right status at the time to buy back in. So that is a big benefit any farmer in their business to run a tunic. So that's is a massive thing to be able to get the full market value of your animal instead of being a salvage value. A tunic, so.
Yes, that's massive for you, full market versus salvage value. That's going to be a big change.
It's a big change, yeah. Yeah, no, it's going to give a bit of confidence back to the farmer too, and maybe be able to buy back in sooner too, instead of waiting months upon months, or at least then it'll keep the thing rolling over and keep their businesses running, because it's not fair that we say beef farmers there that can't pay in for maybe months on end. Like, any business has to run on a regular turnover, and the same with this, and the same with the suckler cow or anything else, so, and in the milk industry. But on top of that, then, there's a few great announcements there for the pedigree business, because it was something that's totally forgot about, and we worked diligently and hard for them, and we've met the breeders at different stages, and I'm glad to say that we have raised their ceiling from 3,000 to 5,000 for in-calf efforts and for cows. Pedigree cows, but that's for pedigree and calf, that's for pedigree cows. That's 2,000 there of a scope, we say, on the valuation of an animal, provided they're eligible for that sort of money. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I know from dealing with farmers, the devastation, people lost a lot of money on that before. So, we're thankful for that, and that's a big step forward. It took a lot of negotiating to get that. Furthermore, if you break down on the farm, 3 bulls can be eligible for a maximum of 5,000, and 1 is only eligible before this. So that's, you're still on a winner there. And the V13 form that's sent out by the valuers before this farmer had to have assessed on the day when the valuer came. That could be the fourth day after one down. But an iron stress, you mightn't have it, or you mightn't have got it, or gotten the post of a status. And that meant you only got paid as a commercial. Now that's on the V13. So that might be valued as a pedigree. So there's an awful lot of benefits there. There's a lot more there maybe to go through.
Yeah, well, no, there's 3 or 4 kind of headline points for us, Hugh. And as you say, look, you have done a lot of negotiation for the 3 bulls as opposed to the 1 bull, and the move from 3,000 to 5,000 on the pedigree. They're both excellent moves. Now, I know, listen, when you're involved in pedigree and you have your bloodline, no money is enough really in relation to compensation, but still it is a step in the right direction. What I'm going to say, Hugh, is because we're just out of time, so I'm going to say many thanks to you for coming on for the few minutes and just giving us an announcement on that, and thanks for all your hard work on it, and we'll speak to you again on the programme.
Well, thanks, then, James. Look, we'll go into it in better detail some other day and more time. And thank you.
Absolutely. Many thanks, Hugh. Hugh Farrell there from the ICSA. Now, those changes are all going to be documented in the Farmers Journal, I should say, tomorrow. And you can have a look at it. But definitive movement in the right direction. And as I said there, Hugh Farrell and the ICSA, they do a great amount of lobbying for TB. And without them, look, there's nobody else ready to fight the case other than the farm organisations for stuff like this. So we need them in our corner, no question about it. Now, that's it for this evening's programme. Many thanks to Aidan Connolly at Hugh Farrell there. Aidan Connolly, his book, The Future of Agriculture. Kieran McAvoy, Grain Chairman from the IFA. And Declan Maron from the Farmers Journal join me at the start of the programme. The show is repeated Sunday morning at 7 a.m. until 8 a.m. We're available wherever you get your podcasts. If you type in MJ space Cleary, C-L-E-R-Y, will pop up. We'll be back to you this night next week. And until then, we'll say goodnight and God bless.